Wednesday, New Year's Eve, at the ranch, it was dreary and cold. An ominous headline for the world was the renewed fighting in the Near East. Apparently, the UN is about to censure the Israelis for an attack on Lebanon. And I pray that any crisis will hold off another 20 days. And for the country, an interesting headline, Senator Teddy Kennedy will fight Russell Long for the job of Senate whip. Lyndon is not waiting for the new year. Ever since we arrived on the 27th, he's been swimming a long way each morning, more than 20 round trips with Marie, his faithful companion. And afterwards, I join him, and the three of us walk fast for a mile from the gate down past the family graveyard. And this morning, we were heavily bundled up against the biting wind. The country is gray and sere. The only splash of color, the swamp holly down by the river close to the Lutheran church. This is the time I shall want to travel in years to come, after Christmas and during January and February, perhaps into mid-March. And then it will be hard to leave the ranch until perhaps the deep middle of the summer. The book on aerobics directs you, I think, to walk that mile in about 13 minutes. Alas, 16 is about as good as we can do. I had much rather stop to see if that is a kingfisher dipping across the water, and where that squirrel is going up the tree, and think what I'd like to plant by the entrance of the ranch, than to jog breathlessly against the second hand on the watch. We got in the car and drove over to the Truesdales, where we had a cup of coffee, and then swiftly back to the airport to meet David Kennedy, who is the secretary-designate of the Treasury. He's a solid, gray-haired man, important-looking, and affable enough, and looked exactly like he ought to, somehow, for the Nixon cabinet. As we drove back to the house, he said to me, "You know, my wife always speaks mighty highly of you. You certainly were a good first lady. Yes, sir, you did a good job of being first lady." And then, rather self-consciously, "Of course, you still are." Oh, how quickly titles and power evaporate. I worked for an hour while he and Lyndon talked, and then we went in for a rather early lunch. Lyndon and Mr. Kennedy and Tom Johnson and Jim and Olivia Jones and Marie Famer and I. And afterwards, I made a long series of calls about the library and the park across the river and my own office business, and to Mary Lasker to thank her for my lovely Fujita, which sits on an easel on my dresser. The solstice has passed, and the days are getting longer by ever so little. Nevertheless, it gives me a lift of the spirit. There is something in me attuned to the weather. Long days and bright sunlight are life, and short days and the grayness of winter are old age and the approach of death. So my spirits begin an ascent, even in late December. To catch the last of the evening, I went riding and caught up with Lyndon and Marie on the Reagan. We drove in companionable silence and then stopped at the Malachek house, where they were just sitting down to supper, with the kitchen full of children and the signs of Christmas. They were having chili and hot tamales. Lyndon had a sample and then another, and presently he was eating his dinner. They are such a good family, the Malacheks, and the pleasure of owning a place like this is entirely in proportion to the quality of the people who run it for you, who staff it for you. And so we realize we are lucky. Back at the house, there was an interval before it was time to go to the Crims for their New Year's Eve party. And so I diligently did my exercises. The 34th night I've done them since we came down from Washington. Aghast at how stiff I had become in the several months since I left them off, disdainful of the encroachments of the years, and confident that I can, one more time, emerge supple and fairly slim. And then I indulged myself in Gunsmoke, and next got up and put on my deep garnet velvet holiday dress, and Lennon and I helicoptered over to the Crims, stopping to pick up Mary Allen and Mary Morrison and Jesse Hunter. A.W. is still sick in bed with a very bad case of Hong Kong flu. And a little past 10, we arrived at the Crims, settling down on the hillside that might have been entirely remote from civilization. So carefully have they placed their house away from roads and people, and walked into one of the most delightful parties of the whole year of 68. What makes a good party? In part, it is a sort of pervasive goodwill that flows between the hosts and the guests, and a sense of excitement, a high singing feeling that this is a rare and special occasion, and fragile, it won't last long. Let's enjoy it. And then a setting of charm and warmth, and good food and drink is a part of the mix, and the chance to move from group to group for reminiscence or serious conversation. And before the evening was over, there was dancing to the piano music of an 81-year-old German with a curly white mustache and an alpine cap and a vest that was covered with medals. He played all the old favorites like Carolina Moon and Let Me Call You Sweetheart. Everybody explored the presidential suite. There was a fire going there. And everybody was enchanted by Matilda's handiwork. And in the firelit main living room, about 40 of us talked and danced and mingled with ease. Matilda brought out some hats. And it was hilarious to look around and see Don Thomas, his hair grown longer with ducktails in the back, wearing the small black derby that gave him an extraordinarily roguish look. And the same on Roy White, almost as though he was saying, I will be young and bet on those racehorses. Jesse was there with Aga, his favorite widow, and Billy and Mary Love Bailey, and both the Max Brookses, she full of her trip to Russia and her experiences in Paris at the cultural meeting of UNESCO. And I was delighted that they had invited the young Tom Johnsons, because I want them to know everyone we know in Austin, and a lot of young people to boot. And in the manner so typical of Arthur and Matilda, they had arranged that Lissy, the maid that they share with Lucy, appeared in a smart and charming dress, as proud and happy as any of the guests. Her children and Mary's children were standing around the edge of the room, helping some, I'm sure, but ushering in the new year along with all of us. I had a very interesting snatch of conversation with Joe Mashman, who had made a recent trip to India and another to Israel to demonstrate to their defense departments the new helicopters of his company. He described the different approaches of the military personnel in each country. The Indians, full of the British tradition, a bit stiff and proper and aware of titles, the colonel who drove him in the jeep over the narrow winding roads to where the demonstration was going to take place, stayed on the road while the huge, heavily loaded lorries, as they approached, no doubt driven by a sergeant, took to the ditch. In Israel, the officials he met, even the high military, were likely to be quite young, upper 30s or 40s, very much in a hurry, aggressive, gung-ho, reaching for the future. When the hour of 12 struck, we all sang Auld Lang Syne and gathered in a sort of circle and looked around at each other with a depth of feeling about the year past and the year to come and the magic of the moment, and no doubt each with our separate gratitude. We had so much fun that it was close to one when we left, and so we began the year 69 on a gay note and a late hour at the LBJ Ranch.